Dear Colgate, I love that you love that I love being at home. You even let me whiten my teeth from home.
Because you know how I feel about getting up from my cloud couch.
The Colgate Optic White LED Kit gives professional level results in just 10 minutes a day for 10 days when used as directed.
And that's why, Colgate, I want you to meet my parents.
Because ever since meeting you, I've been living life to the brightest.
Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello and welcome to the DJ Diaries, a brand new podcast by Lara Fraser and myself, Laura Pradelska.
How you doing? My name is Gary Powell. I am at DJ Diaries. Check it out.
Hello and welcome to episode one of the DJ Diaries with Lara Fraser and myself, Lara Pradelska, and our very first guest, the one, the only, the legend, Mr. Gary Powell. Welcome.
Ooh.
Guys, can we have a cheers?
Cheers.
Thank you so much for coming on, Gary.
And you are more than welcome.
Helping us set up, so thank you.
So this brings me to how we met Gary Powell. Gary, there's a few reasons for your first guest. Number one, we absolutely love you and adore you, and we're big fans of yours.
Oh, that's really cool. Thank you.
Also, this is called the DJ Diaries, and you, I don't know if you know this, but you are the reason that Lara and I are actually DJing, because on our very first gig, I think it was 5 years ago.
Do you know it was at an art gallery?
I don't know
if you remember.
It was Westie's Art Gallery.
Exactly.
It was.
And I left you guys to go watch Kasabian at the Forum.
And you left us, but you taught us a few tricks first because we were newbies.
We were complete beginners. It was our first gig and we kind of just, we booked it because we said, we can DJ. And if it wasn't for you, we would have messed up really badly. And since this is our podcast, I can say that we would have fucked up. In fact, it wouldn't have happened. So thank you.
Which is a lot like my first DJing story as well. But continue.
It's DJ Diaries. Guys, this is the space where we have unfiltered stories. So anything that you want to say, feel free to say it. We will not censor you. We want the truth behind what happens when you're out on stage.
We can say anything we want. I have a third nipple.
Oh my God, me too.
What?
No. Joe.
But the question is, does it get aroused?
Does it go hard?
Does it get aroused?
Does it get around? Aroused? Let's check.
Ooh, that's a spot. Okay. All right.
Apologies. I like you guys specifically, and this, we're going to have to edit this thing out.
Yeah.
We're going to totally have to edit this thing out. Because from when I met you at that gig, Westie's gig, at his gallery, and you guys came up to me and you were like, how do you really like use this equipment?
Yeah.
And
no,
I, and
no,
I gave,
no.
And
I think it was specifically,
gave...
what's the filter?
Yeah. What is this?
How do we turn it on?
Oh my goodness. Okay. And then we chatted and I showed you whatever I could show you at that particular point in time with a good old chat. For the ascendancy of you guys from Ben, it's like been watching a rocket.
Oh,
and that's what I like. I like forward thinking. People who don't stand still, who are not stagnant in life, who are not reliant on anybody else giving them a foot up, who are just like, we need to kind of go and do this. Even coming into the studio right now, I'm in here. The studio's set up. This is you guys. There is no engineer in here. But I like forward-thinking people. I like forward-thinking people who are just like, the world will shit on us if we don't go. If we are not positive, forward-thinking. And doing whatever we can do in order to create the stories in life so that in the future, when we sat down and we're old and decrepit with arthritis and somebody says, Grandma, or whatever, they say, what did you do? You have these great stories to tell. Because that's the only reason we're here.
I completely
agree.
It
ain't about making money. It ain't about none of that nonsense. No. It's about the fact that one day you're going to be able to sit down and you're going to be able to go, you know what? I remember this time.
Yeah,
and someone that will come in here and see the stain on the wall. It is champagne and not what you think, naughty minds. Got a few quick fire questions. I do want to know, edibles or smoking?
Edibles.
Okay.
Okay, the one song that you think will get everyone up and dancing immediately, no matter where you are.
Oh my God, that's a really tough one because I've got so freaking many.
Yeah.
There's a backstory behind this one. I was DJing in Zurich, and again, I just have travel woes. But this was my fault. I missed a flight. And then I had to get a connecting flight into some other city. I can't remember what the other city was. And then I got a bus into Zurich. And I literally had like an hour before I went on stage. And I had a bit of food. And the guy who owned the venue's daughter, who I'm still really good friends with now, his name is Christian Romberg. And at that point in time, I didn't know who Christian was. I had no idea who his daughter was. And then they were just really, really cool. But then I found out that Christian Romberg is like an Austrian kind of like multimillionaire with like resorts out in Thailand and God knows wherever else. And then I bumped into his daughter in Hong Kong years ago. And then we went and met him at this really fancy restaurant, and he owns the Key Club restaurant. Anybody who knows Hong Kong, the Key Club Chinese restaurant in Hong Kong. That's one of his major ventures. And we went to this really, really swanky place and introduced me to some dude who owns a bank and all that type of nonsense. And
as you do.
But we go back to Zurich. I think it was Zurich anyway. And I had some food. But I didn't have time to kind of like figure out what I was doing. And I literally put the last mouthful of food in my mouth. And then the guys were like, we've really got to go now because you should have been on stage like half an hour ago. I was like, what do you mean I should have been on stage half an hour ago? So I then turned up and just kind of like said, hi, how you doing? And I put on, my first track was, an Australian band called Art Versus Science. It was, I put on Art Versus Science. Yeah. And I put on a track, it wasn't... Parlez-vous Francais, it was Magic Mountain. Magic Mountain. And I put that track on because I was like, I just went Magic Mountain. I'm gonna put that track on, and it starts off with like this monologue. In the beginning, there was a mountain, but not any mountain. And this whole crowd just kind of just stopped and went, "What the hell is going on?" And then when the track kicked in, everybody went fucking mental, and I was like, half an hour late. Yeah, whatever. I've got this. It's totally fine.
Quick fact: grime or drum and bass?
Drum and bass.
Which country has the biggest crowd that turns up, like gets the messiest when you do a show?
I would say Germany.
Hong Kong.
Oh, Hong Kong. All right. One lesson you would tell your younger self.
Don't be a dickhead.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you elaborate on that?
I used to be a dickhead.
Funniest tabloid line that has ever come out about the Libertines.
And with me specifically, there was a picture of Pete in New York with a guy that we affectionately called Cracker Chris, who was a crack addict. And the son said that Cracker Chris was me. And I flipped.
No.
And I got the son to print a retraction.
Good for you.
No,
good
but for, no, so you five. Should. Fondest gig memory?
Playing Fuji Rock with Dirty Pretty Things. I DJed in Tokyo the night beforehand, and had an amazing night DJing at this club. I can't remember what the club was called. And I'm luckily in a few months' time, we're back in Tokyo and Osaka, and I get to DJ there again at the same club.
Awesome.
So I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, but awesome!
It's a 5 hours drive from Tokyo to Mount Fuji. Well, not Mount Fuji. I think it's all Namba. Exactly.
This is the big festival we're talking about.
Fuji Rock. And we carried on drinking and being stupid on the tour bus going towards the festival. By the time we got to the festival, it was early in the morning, and all I wanted to do was go to bed. Yeah. And I carried a small amount of equipment with me. I had my stick bag and a few little bits of accessories. And because I didn't know what kit I was going to be playing, but I'll get onto that later on. Mm-hmm. And then I got my key, I got all my passes and stuff, and I got into the lift to go to bed. And I was all in my mind, I was just like, I need to go to bed. I'm so, so tired. And the lift is full of people. And I stood there with my eyes closed. And I was just like, I need to go to bed. I'm dying to go to bed. I've got to go to bed. And then some guy said, Zildjian, looking at my stick bag. He's like, somebody's a drummer. And I, with my eyes closed, went, Zildjian, somebody's a dickhead. He just kind of ignored it. This guy went, hi, I'm Mitch Mitchell. And I went, And I looked, and it was Mitch Mitchell stood in front of me. Mitchell, he played with Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah. No.
And it was in the Jimi Hendrix Experience, and they were playing on the Sunday morning. Yeah. And I was like, oh, God, I'm just really, really shit the bed now. What the f-? Oh. And then the elevator stopped at a floor, and a bunch of people got out. Did Mitch Mitchell get out?
No.
No. Another floor? Did Mitch Mitchell get out?
No.
No. Until the lift was left with two people in there, me and Mitch Mitchell. I walked out the lift. I walked right. Guess which way Mitch Mitchell walked?
No!
He walked right!
Oh, my days!
And we still haven't spoken since I just called him a dickhead. And then I stopped at my door. Whose door was opposite mine? Mitch Mitchell's. His room was opposite mine. And then we stopped. I looked at him. And then he left and I left.
that was
actually quite funny.
So that, it was a good move.
Then we had a little bit of a chat. And then I went to see him play in the morning with the Jimi Hendrix Experience. Mm-hmm. And then we had a chat afterwards. And it was really, really cool. Mm.
Was it amazing?
It was amazing.
Was he incredible?
He was incredible.
I've obviously only seen him.
He was incredible. And yeah. I know, I don't want to talk ill of the dead, but a lot of people talk about the amazing Ginger Baker. Yeah, but when it comes to drumming, British drummers from that particular point in time, there's nobody that was better than Mitch Mitchell. Yeah. There wasn't anybody that was better than Mitch Mitchell. Wow. And then we went on stage, and I was then very much into a specific type of gear that was made by Yamaha called the Musashi snare drum. And they built a whole drum kit that was made based on the fabled warrior called Musashi. And I read about Musashi, and I love Musashi. Musashi was a guy who then went on to read, if anybody knows, The Art of War.
Yes.
Fable book.
Yes.
That is Musashi's Art of War.
Whoa,
and Yamaha made the snare drum.
I didn't know that. That's so interesting.
So I went when we were getting ready to go on stage in the afternoon, I went to the dressing room and there was a bunch of Yamaha dignitaries up there waiting. And they said, we've got a surprise for you. And they said, come. And I followed them and I followed them to the stage and they'd built for me a Musashi drum kit.
No.
Complete Musashi kit.
That's amazing. That's Do you still have it to this day?
No.
No.
It's in Japan.
Oh,
it's in Japan. But they built, from parts
what
that they
honor.
Had. They'd set up my kit for me.
Wow.
Complete Musashi.
That's such an honor.
And then they said, we've cleared it with the festival. You can go play it now. And there was a bunch of people out front. And I tapped around for a little bit, but it sounded so amazing.
That's
but I just played and played and played.
You're like, you're going to have to drag me off this stage.
Yeah, it was absolutely amazing. And then when I did eventually get dragged off stage, I literally had 5 minutes before I had to come back onto stage. That's how long I played.
Oh,
I just wouldn't stop. I just couldn't stop.
It's a passion for you,
it was
right?
absolutely beautiful. It just sounded amazing. So that would be my one.
I love that story.
I absolutely love that.
It's just, you know, we're talking about legends and the humility you have, you know, about it's meeting legends.
I ain't no freaking legend. I ain't no Albert
Einstein. Right, so the final one I want to finish up on is, if you could go back to back with any DJ, who would it be?
Back to back with any DJ?
Yeah.
Well, first and foremost, they'd have to be shitter than me.
Yeah, that is important. That is important.
No, actually, it wouldn't be. I'd go back to back with Todd Terge.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. Todd Terge, yeah. Because I think he's wappy and crazy.
Mm.
Yeah.
I want to say, you know, apart from being a DJ, you're a drummer, you're a singer, you're a producer, you are in a major band called Libertines.
Mm-hmm.
How does this all go together? Of course it does, because it's all being artistic, but what is it that brings you the most joy?
It goes together, but it doesn't go together. It goes together, but it doesn't go together, because first and foremost, I'm Gary more than I am anything else. And I know I'm talking about myself within the third person, which is always very, very douchey to talk about yourself in the third. You know, it totally
That's
is.
That's not douchey. Yeah. Not on this.
It totally is.
No,
talking about yourself in the third person is douchey.
I'm with Gary on this one. It is
really, really douchey.
Yeah.
Talking about yourself in the third person is extremely
douchey. I see what you did there.
Lara thinks it's totally fine. Like she's cool with it.
Yeah,
so.
Tell us more about Lara. Oh my God.
Oh goodness.
Tell us more about Gary.
First and foremost, when I became a member of the Libertines, it was only by hook or by crook. I mean, I became when we started together, it was a three piece. It was me, Pete, and Carl, and I joined the band not because of the music, but first and foremost because of Pete and Carl.
Yeah.
I bought into those guys as characters. Mm. And hopefully I think they bought into me as an individual. The ideology of what the Libertines was and the Good Ship Albion and all of that type of stuff, at that point in time, it meant absolutely nothing to me. You can tell, you can spin a good yarn about a project that sounds amazing, but if the people behind the project are dickheads, why are you going to be involved with it? Are you going to be involved with it because the project sounds good, or are you going to be involved with it because the people are amazing people? And they were amazing people.
I love that you say that, because I think a lot of people would think these are the two most complicated artists to work with in the world, and yet here you are touring, playing Glastonbury, and you guys are still together, and it's still all happening. So it's interesting to hear your point of view on that.
Yeah, I'm touring. I'm not, for me, I'm not touring and doing everything that I'm doing with the Libertines. I'm touring and doing everything I'm doing with my friends Pete, Carl, and John. That's what I'm doing.
I love that.
Everything, you know, the name the Libertines, we could change, we literally could change our name tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't mean anything to me as long as I'm still with my buddies Pete, Carl, and John. That is the most, that for me is the most important thing.
How are the guys?
I'm going to turn you around here. Who cares? Who cares? They're all dickheads. No, they're doing great.
They're doing great. I want to touch on it. Obviously, Pete has a book coming out, and Carl is a genius. And I actually saw one of the sets you guys did. And I mean, the energy, it's all still there. And that's what's amazing, because now it's not the druggy, crazy party. Now, you know, you're all dads. You're a bit older. Well, some of you are dads. And but the electricity is still there.
Yeah.
Do you think it changed now that it's sort of, you know, I would say heroin-free environment?
Well, you know,
is it better?
Well, scientifically speaking, there was a study done a few years ago with reference to the fact that when you sign your record deal, no matter how old you are when you sign your record deal, the energy and the emotional content between you, it doesn't change.
I've heard that. So the emotional maturity is what they said as well.
The emotional maturity doesn't change. So if you're 16 years old, when you sign your record deal with a bunch of people,
you're going to stay that
you're age. You're going to stay 16 years old with those people.
Interesting.
And is that a good or a bad thing?
It's a good and a bad thing. Mm. It's kind of like maybe never the twain shall meet, but it is a good and a bad thing, because there's an aspect of it that is kind of like it's remembering something that is vitally important to you as an individual. It's remembering a period of time that has changed your life, hopefully for the better, forever. And you get to go back to that period of time in order to actually accomplish everything that you are trying to do, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to do. It's also kind of bad, because sometimes you can sound like a dickhead.
Yeah. But you know what? We can all sound like a dickhead sometimes. So
what, we all do.
I
firmly believe that, and people can argue with me as much as they like, there's an age that you get to in life when you decide, metaphysically or whatever, you decide, this is who I am. That's why you'll see a 21-year-old kid on the tube book, being very, very studious, reading a book, instead of being a 21-year-old kid, because he's still just a kid at the age of 21. You know, he's being very studious. This is what I do now. I read books. I studied English literature at school, and now I'm going to tell the world that I'm studying English literature because I'm reading a book, and I'm going to my great job, or I'm going to university. Blah, 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 blah. This is who I am. Yeah. This is what I'm professing to the world. You know, we get to that particular age, and this is who we become. This is who we become.
But on that, I just want to ask, do you think that is something that is decided by the person, or they're emulating a gaze that they think is being put upon them?
The latter.
Yeah.
Definitely the latter.
Yeah.
Definitely the latter. We all assume a role because we all assume that we have to achieve life by assuming the role that's been put in front of us.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to know, did you have any idea when you all started out, and you were, you know, you guys are still the three best friends, but before all this, because look, I look at your Instagram, I love the skating, obviously, I love that you're a dad, I love everything about you, you dress awesome, you cap really well, you look very fit, and cheers to that.
And your kids are so cute.
And your kids are so cute, and I want to know.
Stole them.
I knew
totally
it.
What
them.
I want to know, totally did them. You think 20 years ago,
no,
this would all happen?
No.
Or were you that arrogant kid that went, oh yeah, I'm going to be super famous, one of the biggest bands in the world?
No.
Okay.
I had no idea what I would become in 20 years time.
Right.
Prior to joining the Libertines, I'd quit. I'd been fired from teaching. Mm. I was teaching music in the States.
Okay.
I taught for the Sight and Sound of Scarborough in Ontario in Canada, and the YEA, the Youth Education in the Arts, coming at that point in time, they were out of, oh my God, where were they? And Bergenfield, New Jersey. The majority of my family live in Paterson, New Jersey. So it was kind of like very similar. Very similar kind of like neck of the woods, as it was. So I spent a lot of time doing that. And I thought contemporary classical music, that was going to be my mode of transport throughout life. I had no idea that I would end up being in a rock and roll band. Whoa. When that kind of failed, I then, because all of my heroes at that point in time were drummers like Akira Jimbo, and Dave Weckl, Oscar Peterson on piano, Chick Corea on piano. They were literally the best of the best. And me, I looked at myself and was like, well, I ain't nothing like that. There ain't no way I'm as good as these people. There ain't no way. So I was like, well, I need to find myself something else to do because I'm never going to achieve the goals that they've achieved. So I started doing other things. When I was with the Libertines, I was selling color advertising.
Color
advertising.
What's that?
You know, like this is going back in the day now. Children, not being patronizing now, but children. There used to be a thing called the Yellow Pages.
I remember. Come on.
I mean, you know what?
No, you had to ask. You had to ask what color pages was. So now I'm breaking it down for you.
No, because I know it. I'm Australian. I know it as the Yellow Pages. Is what we know it as. So, you know.
It was a Yellow Pages around the world.
Oh, okay.
Index Yellow Pages in the States. So, or 9X Yellow Pages in New York. Yeah, okay. That's what I was doing.
Genius. Got it.
And it was the shittest job in the entire world. And that's what I was doing then. And then I had a job giving financial advice from a script.
Okay.
Scripted financial advice. Yeah. And that paid for studio time. That's what we did for studio time. But at that point in time, if you were to roll forward for me, 6 months, and then say that we'd be playing Reading and Leeds Festival. Not a
6 clue.
Months
from then. Because
this went really fast, right?
It went very, very fast.
You guys went from literally playing Camden to Reading. Yeah. Am I right to say that?
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And we are recording in Camden right now.
We're recording in Camden right now. And do you know what, Gary? The truth is, I know you're flying the world right now on private jets, I may add.
He's moved up.
He still took the time to come in.
That morning, I may have been on a private jet that night, but in the morning, I should have been on Ryanair.
But it's funny how life works.
Yeah. Tell us about your first DJ.
My DJ story began. I was trying to actually remember how many years ago it began without it making me sound like I'm ancient, even though I know I am. But it was a long time ago, and I was in Amsterdam with an ex girlfriend. Mm-hmm. She was an ex girlfriend at the time. She was flying back to Sacramento.
Okay.
And we went for a trip to Amsterdam for a last hurrah. And as she boarded the plane, and I was going back to the hotel for one more night, and I think Russell Warby, our booking agent, he was coming out because he called us the night beforehand, and me and my ex-girlfriend, we'd just done some mushrooms, and he was just talking a bunch of crap to me, which was just hilarious. It was just really, really funny. And then the next thing I knew, I just remember waking up the next day going, Russell Warby. Wait a minute. Russell's coming. Cool. So I had another night of crazy enough of booze and God knows whatever else with Russell Warby. Yeah, with Russell.
Oh,
who I saw last week, actually. He's a great guy.
Is he still your booking agent?
He's not.
Okay.
He's not. I wish he was.
Was this post-mushroom incident or...
I'm trying to remember if it was... No, Russell turning up was post-mushroom incident.
Okay.
That was definitely post-mushroom incident. Yeah. So anyway... As I'm walking back to the hotel, I get a phone call from our then ex-manager. He was our then manager, Alan McGee. And Alan McGee calls up and says, Gary, where are you? I was like, in Amsterdam. He went, right. Because he said right a lot. Right. And then he said, I'm sending you to Bologna to DJ at the weekend. And I went, okay. Because he knew I was a bit of a vinyl junkie and I just played lots of music and stuff and blah, blah, blah.
But you hadn't DJed.
But I'd never DJed in front of folk beforehand. I'd like put records on.
Okay, but that's a start. Listen.
That's not Alan McGee calling you up and saying, can you DJ in Barcelona?
But I do actually remember saying, but you do know that I've never really kind of DJed in front of folk beforehand. Mm. And he was like, don't worry about it, man. It'll be fine. Mm. Oh, sorry. Don't worry about it, God. It'll be fine. So flew in from Stansted. I got picked up at the airport by some dude in some big ass car. And I'm just like, oh, this is kind of getting real. This is getting a bit real because I wasn't paying any attention to it beforehand. A few drinks in the bar, a few drinks on the plane, and then this dude said, right, we're taking you to a radio station. And I went, what do you mean you're taking me to a radio station? He said, like, there's everybody knows that you're coming, so it's a big deal that That's you're coming amazing. Out. And I went, okay. And a bunch of people met me at this Bologna radio station, and they interviewed me, blah, blah, and they were like, what type of set are you playing? Me, I went out the night beforehand, and I just, like, I burnt a shitload of CDs, and I was just like, yeah, whatever. They want some indie schmindy nonsense. I'm going to play some indie stuff and a bit, and then I'm like, well, I don't actually like playing indie. I'm not an indie DJ. I've never have been. At home beforehand with my vinyl, it was rare grooves, it was funk, it was acid jazz, it was jazz, it was tech house, it was tech. I just played everything at home apart from indie. Yeah. There was only a few things indie that I played, and the only reason I played it was because I was in the amphitheater of indie. Regarding DJing, it's the worst music to DJ because all producers compress the crap out of indie music. So you can't do anything with it. All you can do is press play. Yeah, it's just like, if you look at the wave files, it's just a block. Yeah. Indie music is just a block. Okay. You can't do a damn thing with it. I'm not saying I hate indie music because I am in a reputable indie band, as it were.
So. No, just a small name, guys.
So I finished the radio session, and then the driver says, where do you want to go? Do you want to go to your hotel, or do you want to go to the venue? And I said, maybe take me to the venue. And I went to the venue, and the house engineer was just like, do you want to sound check? And I went, yeah, I'd love to sound check. And by the way, could you show me how to use all of this equipment? Because I've never used any of this before in my entire life. But once he actually just kind of showed me the play, record, the cue.
Yeah, the setup.
It's nice
the
that faders. He showed you.
Yeah, he showed me. And then it wasn't the most technical set I've ever done.
Right.
But I got through it.
Did you fall in love with it?
I didn't fall in love with it then, no. What actually happened with me was I got through it, and then I realized that getting through it wasn't enough.
Right.
Which I find it's a massive problem with a lot of indie DJs.
Correct.
Mm. They're happy just to get through it. I'm like, you can't.
You gotta love it.
You've got to be a DJ in order to DJ.
Agreed.
You've got to pay your dues. Yeah. If not, then you're kind of sullying the waters of DJing. You're making DJing look like it's a walk in the park, and it's not a walk in the park. It's very, very difficult. It's a difficult art form to actually get down. And I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that I am an amazing DJ. I'm definitely.
You
not.
Are.
And I'm definitely not an amazing DJ.
We have both seen you DJ.
But I've worked on the craft so that I can actually then hopefully stand next to a DJ and hopefully hold my own to a certain degree.
One thing I would say when the times I've seen you DJ, and I've seen you DJ a lot over the last 5 years, pretty much most venues that I go to, you know, you'll be headlining it. And one thing that I find with you is that you're having a blast DJing.
Yeah.
You always have a drink. You're always dancing. You're always saying hello to people. You seem in your element. And that's real, right?
Yeah. No, it's real. Because what I do, which is somewhat different to a lot of DJs, I've still kind of like live by the mantra of put music together to a degree. Mm. But what music I put together, I've got no idea. Mm. So then... like when back in the day when you were younger and when I was younger, when you'd go and see a DJ play, you'd see a DJ file through his vinyl selection to try and find what the next piece of music would be. You know, that's where the terminology crate diggers come from. Mm. Crate diggers, they just dig through all of their stuff, find the next piece of vinyl while there's a piece of music playing, and then they'd match that piece of music perfectly. We don't do that now. We scroll on the computer,
but we have our
decks all kind of set up for us. I don't do any of that. I don't. Yeah. It's all
a
mishmash.
Those days, though. I remember being high as a kite and just kind of going through all the vinyls and just thinking, this is the one, and then back again. So it's
a complete mishmash. I'm literally hunting for stuff, and sometimes I'm hunting for stuff, and it's like I can see there's like a minute left. Mm. Of that track, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm still gonna try and find something, because I think it's a visual thing as well. People want to see you getting down and having a great time with the music, but they also want to see you hunting for stuff, because in their minds it's like, what are you gonna play next?
Correct.
What is it that you're looking for? What is it? You know, that the audio visual thing is very important. Nobody ever says, I'm going to hear a show. Yeah. Everybody says, I'm going to see a show.
I wanted to ask you on the, like, between the vinyl and obviously with CDJs and stuff now, do you think it's a different art form? Do you feel like you've had to change your skill base and your performance style?
I'm not going to pretend and say that I was a vinyl DJ.
Okay.
I was at best a semi-professional musical connoisseur. But regarding the whole kind of like concept of streaming and putting a whole bunch of music together, I didn't do that. And it was only CD, you know, the utilization of CDJs that gave me the opportunity to actually try and kind of like put together what would then be a complete and utter platform of music.
Really appreciated from Laura and I that you've come on the show, because I know you have a shitload of things to do and you're about to play Glasgow and you're on tour.
Well, you know, I love you guys. You guys are awesome.
Yeah.
And
it just means
a lot. You were just awesome.
It's never underappreciated. It really is. And it means everything to us. I genuinely mean that. And it's just a joy to have support like you also on the gram and also just all around. It's really, really nice. And it's what makes this industry so beautiful.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.